June 21st, 2009, this is a Watt from Pedro show.
What was said to the rose that made it open was said to me here in my chest. What was told the cypress that made it strong and straight? what was whispered, the jasmine. So it is what it is. Whatever made sugarcane sweet, whatever was said to the inhabitants of the town of Chugil in Turkestan that makes them so handsome, whatever lets the pomegranate flower blush like a human face, that is being said to me now. I blush. Whatever put eloquence in language, that's happening here. The great warehouse doors open. I fill with gratitude, chewing a piece of sugarcane, in love with the one to whom every that belongs. What was said to the rose that made it open was said to me here in my chest.
Watt for Pedro Show. Happy Sunday.
Father's.
Summer solstice.
Yeah.
Longest day of the year. And, yeah,
all Pop's Day. Fathers out there.
Yeah. My pop's been gone 18 years. I was pedaling. I had to pedal late today because it was late gig last night. Redwood, blew a lot of clams. So did an act of contrition on the rocks there at Royal Palms.
Gloria Mann was the most active one I've ever seen.
No, yeah, I should say we got some guests. Joining me and Brother Matt is Mr. Bob Stiers, Mr.
Hello.
Chuan, Mr. Joe, his buddy Mr. Kevin.
Hey.
And you people can't see it, but maybe you can hear it. Do those cameras make sound? They whirl?
They got a whiz.
Yeah, so if you hear whizzing, that's the cameras.
He's taking a whiz.
Mr. Kevin is...
piss bottles out.
Doing a document, right?
Cool.
What would you call it?
I'd say document.
Propaganda film.
Yeah, Joe, eyewitness news.
Propaganda film.
Bob, hold on. Joe, you said last night there's a thread you're making.
Yeah, well... I'm shooting a concert series, and a lot of the, you know, musicianship going on around town has sort of a thread that goes through it. People influence each other, just being in towns over from each other influences each other, and so eventually they cross paths.
So it's kind of an L.A. story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on.
The Nederlander story.
And, he's filming at, you know, Missing Man gigs, Second Man gigs, Hell Ride gigs, Banyan gigs.
It doesn't have anything to do with the big Banyan tree?
Well, that's a part of the philosophy.
Well, Perkins, when he came up with that name, he was thinking of the Banyan tree because his the other trunks grow from the limbs. And I don't know.
It's a physical specimen, the way it grows continuously, and it's a fascinating...
There's a whooping-ass one in Thomas Edison's Menlo Park pad.
Really?
It's been growing for years. There's also a big one in, on the way to Diamond Head in Oahu.
Yeah.
That's with the Gandhi statue. There's a whooper, man. I mean, it's like a forest from one tree.
So that's the kind of tree that Buddha was sitting under when he was enlightened?
No, that's a Bodhi tree.
Bodhi, right.
Maybe they're the same. Maybe that's India Buddha, where it's Sanskrit.
Banyan, Bodhi.
I think it is.
The Bodhi tree was, that's where the Bodhisattva comes from.
Yeah.
That's where you got the bing. I don't know how many, 40 days or something? He sat there a long time and just bing. And the Bodhisattva gets the bing, but don't go. He stays back for us.
Pass some lessons along.
Yeah. That is way more Mingus-like.
Mingus?
No, not Mingus. Charlie died an angry man.
Like punching Jackie McLean, right?
Yeah.
No. Mingus, maybe he was kind of a Bodhisattva. In a musical sense. Maybe the social skills were a little still in learning stage.
Really?
Speaking of learning, Brother Matt, how many?
49.
49 graduated.
Yeah, we rocked.
Big respect.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Twan.
We rocked.
Mm-hmm. That's hard work, I can attest. I haven't just been at a place for a few weeks.
It's just the magic of the place and having some cool folks working it and getting rid of the kooks.
I think the like topography here, the fact that, you know...
Cooks not being the students, but being administration.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah, that's third in voting. Don't you think that it works better here because of the topography and all? Whereas if you slam that up at 68th and...
Even that back at our main office at Harbor Rock, it's like out here getting the fresh energy, fresh air, fresh water, and back there's like backwater, back harbor, sludge.
Now, what do you think about when high school gets, because Pedro's getting a new high school.
Yeah.
Called Angels Gate. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Angels Gate, well, I should say what with the music. We started out with John Coltrane doing Stellar Regions, and then we heard Migu with Feelings, new album. And then, you cats know about Rumi?
The poet? Yeah.
From like 700 years ago? Mm-hmm. Well, that's Coleman Barks reading what was said to the rose. He wrote some trippy-ass poems.
Yeah,
man.
He's like old.
I think he lived in that what's called Afghanistan or part of the world. Mm. And he was a Sufi. And a Sufi's kind of like a mystic kind of Muslim trip.
Yeah, kind of a nomadic wanderer type of a poet.
Yeah. And kind of like the experience has to be very personal and
inductive.
And in Turkey, it ended up as dervish, right? The guys twirling spins, around. The spinners. And where the dead got that idea.
Yeah, we got to have all those fans. Chicks, those hippie chickies, you know.
Yeah,
like,
actually.
Skirts around.
Actually.
Good times.
Yeah, it is a way of getting a transcend, getting
there's
altered
a,
states.
There's a whole technique to it, I heard. The way you hold your hands and the angle of the head when you're doing the twirling. And they were at UCLA.
Physics, yeah.
Like the Turk. They're really intense about being secular, but they allow it because of a cultural thing, and there's a troop touring around and doing that thing where they kind of coordinated. Mm. Yeah. But what happens, you get yourself in a state, ecstatic. Mm-hmm. And I think Rumi was into this. And his poems read like that. They're real passionate. It's good stuff. But speaking of angels, Kate. Okay, yesterday, you see the sun today, there ain't a cloud in the sky. Right. Yesterday was gray, okay? And I went out early. And it was calm in the harbor.
We hit the cool.
There was some motion,
there.
Okay? There was some motion, but no slapping, no water in the face. And that motion is a great feeling to have. Mm-hmm. But then I hit the Angel Gate and went into the open sea, and all of a sudden it turned. And the little mist came down, the sky grayed up even darker. And, oh, man, there's... You don't know where these things come from, right? Because they're not. There's no coast there. I mean, there is some kind of bounce back reflective off the breakwater, but some motherfuckers came in, and I was in these troughs that were like 5-6 feet, and I was total tininess being bobbed, and you know the situation there. You have to be
intense forces coming in out a lot of water surging out of the.
And it was outside too. I think there was just some heaviness, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Was that picture you sent me was of the gate? That was as you were going out.
Yeah, so that's me coming back and being so grateful I made it because
that
I got
picture.
Out there and the shit caught me and I had to plow into it. I couldn't bring her about because if I turned a beam on her, she'd roll me. So I had to go right into them. And of course, it's carrying me more and more out. But I had to wait till the sets died back, down so I could bring her about. But there's this reflection thing off the breakwater. You know, the opening's only so big.
Yeah.
And they're coming off back on, and man, I'm not much of a man, so I'm not saying you're brave, but you gotta stay calm. If you fucking wig.
Yeah,
you gotta get both hands on that fucking paddle because it's
that's
a balance bar, and you just gotta wait it out, and like, you know, I'll come around when she lets me. And fuck, I mean, it was intense. And then, you know, I do bring her about, and then the shit's behind you, pushing you, okay? And there's something about in front of you, even if they're whoop-ass, at least you've seen it and shit. Mm. When it's behind you, and you're just,
squirty.
Like, you're going to hurl. Like, the thing, the aft is just going to come up over you, and you're just like, just don't want to roll her. Now, my yak's a little one, and it's got a big hole, though. So she'll swan. You know,
that
I don't know.
Like
yeah, you don't have
turtled.
A skirt on it.
That could easily be turtled.
Skirt, but if, yeah, but she turtled, maybe it would capture air and not let her sink. Mm. But if she caught water and didn't turtle, and just filled up, she'd go down. I know. Water's so heavy.
Yeah.
It does have a back compartment that'll keep the little wheels in with the rubber lip. I don't know. I've never tried it. I've never yet have gone. You know, sit on top. You ain't got to worry about that stuff because they always float. But you get wet in those.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was getting a little wetter. A little wet.
You got to know how to play it. You know, Keith Milne, the story about him.
I don't know if you know how to play it. I think she's playing you, and you just got to hang on. And
when something's filling up.
Beg for a...
You use your, that's when you use your Buddhist stillness, calm, still yourself. You know.
There's a different ways where it fills up. I mean, this the way I'm talking about right now is like she rolls over and takes water. There's a thing when you're going out and the waves are just so high. If you're going out not from the breakwater,
so it's doing this popping bell.
No, the waves are just so high they break over your bow and fill you up.
Yeah.
But I got a pump and I got half a Clorox bottle and I bail with that stuff.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like I said, sit on top, you ain't got that risk.
Mm.
But then sit on top, you're going to get wet.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're going to be out for 2 hours and it's cold.
Yeah, it can be bone chilling. You get off and your legs are asleep and you fall in the water.
No circulation.
You know that?
So I'd rather risk having the openness. The small hole, actually, not water, get in there. There's a skirt, these guys, white water in them and stuff. But those, hard to get out of if they do roll.
They got a little emergency cord, so it pulls out.
Pulls out, and you pull your knees up to your chest. And you
yeah, know. So there's a technique, but it's like you're getting used to a new technique. Yeah, yeah.
But is it like Joe Mannix rolling out of a car at 50 miles an hour, you know, dipping the shoulder? I mean, you got it. There's something, that physics sort of Tai Chi aspect to it.
Yeah, once you get it down, it works okay. Because when I was down in the Sierra Cortez, we had to use the skirt thing. I didn't do any rolls or anything, one day was totally storming with some swells and heavy wind and rain, and it was a good thing to have that skirt on.
Yeah, because you can take on water and you don't go in the boat.
Yeah,
yeah, that's you get tired.
I mean,
and
when you
get
when it washes over you, mine thing is totally vulnerable because it's like a tiny bathtub.
Mm-hmm. Well, how much water would that hold in it? Because you figured 8 pounds a gallon,
more than you'd want.
I mean, five gallons is 40 pounds.
Yeah. I used to do the sparklet bottle without the glass.
Now they're plastic, but they're still weighing a bunch.
Yeah.
That's a hard job, man. But anyway, I felt very relieved back in it, because as soon as I got inside harbor, it was calm again. That stuff was all happening on the outside.
The gate,
I've had situations because of this kind of lake effect, the reflective, where it's rougher inside the harbor.
Yeah, it totally gets rough.
That's a kickback, you know, from hitting the
hurricane gulch out there.
That back, but that, you know, that picture that you should put that up on your site. It really captures some tension. When I saw that, I go, this doesn't look like he was just chilling with the pelicans today, man.
It's
the water's almost up in the boat.
Bob, actually, it's after, and so I am relieved.
Yeah.
I turned back. I got a new camera. It's a waterproof camera. I don't have to use the little camera in the skin diver housing anymore. It's a Pentax. But I don't have a lanyard yet for it. So this fucking thing's laying on my lap, you know.
So it takes little movies, too?
It takes movies. There's been these baby Ashika sea lions hanging out on those rocks at the lighthouse in the Angel Gate. Now there's only about 10. At first there was like 40 of them. Tiny guys, you know? 2-3 foot. Mm-hmm. Like their parents.
So the parents aren't ever out there? Because when you first got back, it looked like they were out to see you, some of them.
The way sea lions work is a man runs a harem. And so all the other dudes are in these packs of like very frustrated young men. Like, if you've been to Pier 39, San Francisco, all those ones by that restaurant.
Yeah.
Those are all young men that are very, you know, they're fighting over.
They didn't
sexually frustrated.
Well, they don't have a harem.
Sexually frustrated.
They got to wait till some guy gets old or weak. And so what happens is they go and sometimes harass the mothers and they separate from their kids.
Oh.
Yeah. So none of these kids, these babies had tags on their flippers. You know, we got a hospital
here. Yeah, yeah.
And so none of them have been in. It's trippy. I've never seen. I've always seen a couple, sometimes or one, but never masses of juveniles.
They've been finding a lot of dead ones on the beach.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just read an article about that. They're like washing up, like malnourished everywhere, all over.
They kind of like hide those.
But there was a bacteria getting in the brain and making them insane.
But there's too many charging.
A lot of that information is suppressed.
Like,
you know, even how
many? There's a lot of competition for that food. They don't really have any.
Also, all these shores used to be their lands.
Mm.
And you've removed so many things, like, I don't care if it's abalone, but so many things aren't there that have that synergy.
There's too many sharks gobbling them.
Yeah.
That's their hurting, right?
Yeah.
But they also, they're home. It's hard for them to be at sea, especially if sea gets rough. It tires them out.
Mm.
They don't always stay at sea. That's why you see them piling on the buoys.
Mm. There's a bunch of different kinds around here, too. The sea
lions,
harbor seals, pinnipeds.
Because of the, well, they're all pinniped family. And then it has to do with the ears classified, a sea lion and a seal. Mm. Harbor seals, more round head, bulbous eyes, whiskers, spots.
Mm.
Yeah, the whole, the body, I don't know what you call that, when the genes show themselves.
When what shows itself?
The genes show themselves. There's a term for that.
Oh.
Fuck. But, you know, because like, right, you have a blue eyes.
Recessive gene.
But that means you got both recessive genes, right? But you could have brown gene.
Well, you carry the
brown eyes that has a recessive and a dominant, but it don't show up. It looks brown, so that's why the gene thing is different than the way it appears. You can't really see the gene thing.
Mm.
Well, now they can examine DNA and shit.
And then something goes wrong, and you end up being left-handed. That's the theory, is from the 6 month of pregnancy to the first 6 months of life, something went wrong and it flips.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, behavior. And I don't think that is.
Well, that's just, actually, that's the machine itself, though, the will of it to adapt instantly to a crisis, like you're talking about.
Yeah, but behavior. Right. There's a whole argument about behavior versus genes.
Environment and.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Yeah, but if you have the bad gene and the person with the behavior that drives that train.
Yeah, but why is it bad gene?
It's a bad seed.
I don't know.
The bad seed. You never saw that film? You haven't? One of the greatest classics of all time.
So it was kind of scary. To teach you respect to the ocean. Never get too overconfident. Sea is something else. Like these two cats last week who tried to go to Santa Barbara. Mm. You know about that?
Yeah. The dudes in the boats and
they just started sailing and they want to go 100 miles.
Yeah.
Coast Guard, all those, they were looking at it. I think they found parts of the boat.
Really?
Not them.
Yeah, they were missing for a while.
100 miles.
Just scored a boat, no experience.
Young guys, early 20s or something.
Those are Croatian saying, more, more, or something like that. The ocean can. Because
it can.
Yeah,
it can
do whatever.
It's a Croatian saying, the more, more.
Yeah.
Means the ocean can. That's right. I've never heard that before. That's fucking cool.
I like that. Yeah, it can and will.
And those are very wise econo words.
Yeah,
totally.
My grandfather spent a lot of time fishing.
We'll be right back.
Juan from Pedro Show. Okay, we heard some. This guy's got the greatest name. This is a cat from Redondo Beach. He's in a band called Stab City, but he also does some solo stuff. And his name, his birth name is Sailor. Sailor Alexander. And that's a tune of his called Undercover. Then Joe Boone came to town. D. Boone's little brother, like 2 years younger than us, came to town. I jammed with him up the prac pad.
Oh, cool.
Got this big old fucking calluses. Not calluses. What's before that? Blister. Big ones, because he ain't been playing in a while. But he brought me, he's been making some pewter music. So that was a, he wants to make an album where every song's got in the title of their tunes, motherfucker. And so that one's Death to the Motherfuckers.
Now that sounds like that's genetic. It's and behavior. That cussing thing, man.
Man, we heard the Reactionaries. Now this was the band before the Minuteman, 78, 79, Pedro. Started in 78, broke up middle of 79. And a song called Innuendo. And today, George Hurley is recording on drums his song Innuendo with some other Pedro musicians.
Oh, cool.
Guys kind of from the 90s on.
How dare you.
Craig Ibarra put together this concept. We made one practice tape with 10 songs in Georgie's prac pad. The one that said Olympic bonging team on the hatch. Across from the high school lunchtime. Was like, yeah, okay.
Where's this practice?
The science building. Remember the brick? Yeah. So he was on 17th Street. There, right. That's where we prac. That's why we got Georgie, because the drummers need prac pads.
17th and what?
In the shed. 17th and Alma. Maybe maybe four houses up west.
Towards the hill.
Yeah. So we did 10 songs and made two cassettes. I gave one to Brendan, who was, had the second mask at the time, you know, to try to get a gig. And then I kept one. And that was it. And I gave this... actually, you can hear these things at corndogs.org. Because I gave it to the cat running there.
Hey, that's the
but
best.
But Craig Ibarra, the guy who runs Rise and Fall Fanzine.
Craig rocks.
He came up with this concept. Let's get some, I don't know, second, third wave punk scene in Pedro guys to
bring
do
back
these
to
10
life.
Songs. Yeah.
Cool.
So he, and somehow he put all the names in a hat and picked dudes. And a couple weeks I record with, I think Jack Brewer's a singer. I'm on bass. Dirk Vandenberg, drummer. I can't remember who the guitar is. But this band, Georgie's in, it's got Vince Giobbe, a longshoreman guy, on bass. Joe Biza's on guitar.
Cool. Oh, hey.
Fuck, I can't remember who's singing it. But it's that song, Innuendo.
That's cool, a neat project.
Yeah, it's a trip. I mean, these were the first, I wrote all these songs.
Steps
well, seven of the 10 I wrote the words, but I wrote all the music, and this is my first time. I mean, I wrote one song as a teenager, but these are ones after. And punk scene came on there. You know, we're seeing the Bags and bands like this, so it's kind of like that. We didn't have enough courage yet to do, like, Wire or pop group yet, so.
Well, what's this, like, 1979, Mike, or what?
Yeah, yeah. When this was recorded, no, it's in 78. In fact, there's a song called 1979 because it was coming up.
Great.
Well, The Clash had a song called 1977. And we like that green record.
Yeah, the 10-inch?
No, it's the album.
Oh, the first one, yeah.
The drummer was Tori Crimes or something. Yeah.
Topper Heaton was the
But there's nobody on the... No, it's Tori Crimes. Yeah. I guess his real name was Terry Chimes. Mm-hmm. But the cover didn't have any drummer. It was just the guitarist and the bass player.
So who are some of the other local bands doing the Reactionary tunes?
Yeah. Man, I wish
I City on that?
I have a... Craig Ibarra sent me the whole list of these guys. No, they're Pedro guys. I know Raul's on one. They're all doing it on 15th Street. They built a studio in that the old Peck Manor where Raul
cool.
lives.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
is Raul's band?
In the cellar. No, it ain't band. The bands are put together by Craig Ibarra picking... names out of a hat.
That's cool.
Okay, so it's not one band. It's musicians mixed and match. Yeah.
This sounds like a motherfucker Minutemen type idea. I like it. You know.
Well, kind of. It's Pedro.
You know? Yeah. It's lowercase, but with some kick to it.
I don't know what it's like. I don't know what their face. I haven't heard any of the recordings yet. I think five are done so far. There's five more to go.
So this is like
so I don't know if they're like. Faithful to that practice tape, or did they just take the song and go on their own trip with it? I don't know. I don't know what I'm on. The one I've got is 1979 with Jack Brewer.
Does it sound like a Jonesy song?
I think
song
they want me to sing one too. I think I'm actually on two songs. I play bass on 1979, and then I sing on Video Madonna. I mean, this is before Madonna was a. I don't know what the fuck. I wrote this song about like a TV being something to pray to. So that's where I said Video Madonna.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with the singer. I didn't know the singer until like 84 when Kay turned me on. Oh, she's working on a Clint Eastwood movie.
Yes, she said.
That's Nelson
cool.
Mandela.
Really? Clint's getting more interested in every film. That's cool.
Yeah, somebody told me he runs this big golf club in Carmel. I think he needs... Pay $500,000 just to get it.
And he plays Dirty Harry, basically. He's at the.
He's got a great restaurant up there too. Or he used to anyway. I don't know if he still does.
Wasn't he mayor there for a while?
I think he was.
So. How old is he now? He's in his late 70s, or.
Yeah. I met him once. Carducci took me to Director's Guild where
he
talked.
He's working. He's pushing it. I like that. Late surge.
He took me to Director's Guild where Clint Eastwood was doing a tribute to his mentor, which was. Don Siegel, I think, produced, played Misty for me.
Okay.
And Siegel comes out of this 64. Place where he was making montages. Like in a film, if you want to see, like, a bunch of, give the sense of a bunch of times went by.
Flashbacks.
So you have a bunch of calendars, pages flipping. That's like a montage.
Yeah.
So he learned how to work really cheap in Econo and studios like that.
Montage.
And he's like a mentor, so he's given this. They showed that movie, and they showed The Beguiled.
That's a good
he's,
one.
I think, the only man in the movie.
Oh, wow.
They end up poisoning him with mushrooms. He's a Union soldier with a bunch of Confederate women. Makes them all kind of crazy. They cut his leg off or something.
Poison.
Did you ever see that? Anyway, no, since he both these movies, one. And then he gives a talk. And then at the end, just so happened, he was right there, and I got to shake his hand.
Cool. Clint.
Wow.
Eastwood, yeah.
Was he living in the moment?
He seemed very together and calm, but not, it's all about me.
Yeah, he's not all starstruck
type
of dude.
Like when you shook his hand, like someone I know took hands with the Dalai Lama, and he said, the cool thing was, there's a lot of people, but he took long enough to lock in with you and feel the, send the energy vibe, you know. And that,
he seemed like he was like a little cautious of a weird man.
Yeah, like what makes a man start fires? He probably has that record, man. He plays it on the saxophone.
Okay, get this. Last week, me and Raymond go and see Roger Corman talk. Hmm. Yeah, it was very interesting. This guy in his 80s and sharp as a tack, man, and talking about making movies. I guess his autobiography is called How I Made 100 Movies and Never Lost a Dime or something.
Yeah, that's how I started my film career. I worked my first three movies with Roger Corman.
Wow, man, is he a sensei?
He was a scum fuck. Well, I mean, it's true. He did make all those movies, Never Lost a Dime. It's because he didn't fucking pay anybody.
Yeah, okay. So he has to hit one on the street because he doesn't
pay. Do you like him as an artist?
No, I wouldn't call what he does 50
director,
art.
50 movies is he more like directed, Wood, 500 he produced.
Huh? Oh, he's done, produced. I've never worked with him as a director.
So he's directed this.
He's not even like Ed Wood, because at least Ed Wood was passionate in the one project. He's on 50 million things at once.
He's
and
just
wants to
movies.
Churn it out.
He just churns movies out, you know?
Well, he's got a movie called The Wild Angels, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's about bikers, and I guess they use some real bikers.
Yeah.
The back of their jackets say San Pedro. Now, I asked him about after the movie. I come up to him, and Raymond takes me to the back there. It was at the Hammer thing in Westwood. And I said, what's that about, the San Pedro? I never noticed that before, but I'm watching it. And, he said, well, the big chapter is San Bernardino. San Bernardino, they didn't want that in the movie. But they said, we got some people in Pedro, so use that name. And it's got the San, you know. Yeah. So he said that was fun. And I said, well, thanks a lot. I said, much respect. And it was the same kind of look in the eyes, like there's a very weird man. So I sensed that, and I got right out of there really quick. I didn't have that for him. I sensed it in him. I wanted to liberate him.
But if he knew you were in a band sang a song about General Custer's dying machine in his pants, he'd have had a fit with that, man. He'd have gone John Wayne on you.
He also said he took L in Big Sur, because if he was going to make that trip movie, he thought he should know about it. And he said he fell in the mud and just face down the whole trip in the mud.
Well, right.
So, Twan, what's your experience?
You could feel like you're in Vietnam if you do that.
But, Roger, I worked a lot with his wife, too, Julie Corman, who's just awful, awful person. And my first movie, as a matter of fact, it was called... Here's a
real life experience.
Here's a Rod Shorts. My first movie. I was 23 years old, and with Roger Corman, it's the only place I knew where you could walk in off the street, not knowing anything about filmmaking or how it's done, and get a job. I worked as a grip, right? So it was called High Riders.
And when someone yanks your skivvies, your chonies.
No, the name of the movie is called High Riders. Right? It's about these biker, renegade bikers who grow pot.
Wedgie.
Right?
Wedgie.
So then here's how Roger works. He'll have a title
there's
like that.
There's a front side to that, too.
Melvin.
You are.
So, anyhow, he goes through all these incarnations of what's the title actually going to be. So it starts off as High Riders. Kind of boring, right? And then I went from that to...
what's a grip guy do?
That's boring. We don't need to talk about that kind of
thing. That and gaffers.
It's boring stuff. It's technical.
It's guys behind the scenes.
Yeah, behind the scenes.
The shootings happen.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So,
but you're not handling
the
camera.
That's my first job. I didn't know.
You're not a cameraman.
Yeah. No, you're not a cameraman, but you...
It's a labor job, man.
I'll tell you. Have you done it? Here, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you how it's done. But no, it's all camera motion. It's all, you know, it's whenever you see a crane move or a dolly moving, it's a grip is handling all that kind of stuff. And that's just one of many things that a grip does.
Kind of schlep?
As opposed to the best
boy.
Okay. Then what is the best boy?
No, we shouldn't even get into this boring shit.
Okay.
It's really for
radio shack to
the
title.
The best boy, that's scary is what it is. It's not boring, that's frightening.
The title keeps changing.
Yeah, because it's like, okay, High Riders. Okay, that's whatever it is. And then he changed it to something else that was a little bit more exciting. The movie was finally released. It was called Warlords from Hell.
That's the AIP.
That's the end of
that's
the
Sam Harkoff
release.
Yeah.
And it was my first movie, and I became really good friends of a guy who became a huge star. He got his big break. You know, Terminator 2, the second Terminator.
Oh, Rob Patrick.
The guy who played the liquid Terminator, the guy who could shapeshift.
Yeah.
That was his breakout movie. His first movie was Warlords from Hell. And he played a bad guy, and that's all he said to the protagonist in the movie is... come on, get up, you fucking pussies. And it's not like that's all. He said shit like that. I was
working with Roger Corman.
Besides
changing movie titles, what about some other insights?
Oh, well, you work for Roger Corman to get an education in filmmaking.
Yeah.
One of Jack Nicholson's first movies, I think it was...
Hell's Angels.
No, it wasn't the Hell's Angels one. It was the one that was redone by David Geffen. It was a musical, The Plant That Eats People. What's it called?
Little Shop of Horrors.
Jack Nicholson,
one of his first movies. Francis Ford Coppola was one of his main assistants.
Yeah.
Venus Flytrap.
There's tons of huge, huge talents came through the school of Roger Corman.
Okay.
Well, he worked with AIP with Sam Markoff and that whole factory. They distributed a lot of his pictures.
Who?
AIP,
he was talking a lot about
Roger Corman. No, Roger Corman, this is why Roger made so much fucking money, is because he handled not just the production of his movies, but the distribution. He didn't have
that. So Russ Meyer, smart.
He would just...
Came back to him.
But he was he was talking a lot about AIP.
Was he? Yeah. You know more about that than I.
He was
know
talking
about
the Poe movies.
Yeah, but I don't know anything
with
about
Vincent
it.
Vincent Price.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did
one of your old partners. I don't know if he's your old partner. You remember Colin Edwards? He had the band Bay of Pigs.
Yeah, yeah.
And he ran Roger's studio in Venice Beach, which is now a big so-called artist block complex. You know, but
it's become a Bay of Pigs then, really.
Sort of. And but Colin used to run that studio, and I lived in Venice Beach, and that became like my personal playground. It was fucking great. Just going there every day, hanging at the studio. That's, in fact, I produced the first Bay of Pigs music video. It was called Plastic Pig, named after one of their albums. And the way we made it was Roger had this storage shed in the back, right, where they put all their film cans. They're called short ends. When you're filming, oftentimes you might have 1,000. You buy a brand new film and you have 1,000-foot roll of film. Let's say through the course of production you only use 800 feet of that. You have 200 feet left. Yeah. That's a short end.
Okay.
So oftentimes these short ends just end up stuffed in a closet somewhere. So what we ended up doing, with Roger, that shit's just gonna rot there. So we took all that shit. Sold it to Studio Film and Tape, which is they buy used film, they test it to make sure it's good, and then
refurbish it or whatever.
And then they sell it at lower rates to filmmakers. And that's how we funded the first whole music video. Totally, you know, Econo. Just
cleaning out the place.
Yeah, because, well, the thing is, it's like it would rain, and that storage locker would get flooded, so the film cans that were on the bottom were just underwater.
Oh,
so,
man.
Roger, they didn't care about that fucking film, so I don't feel like I stole anything. I just took that shit and made
music. Already wrote that off, so, I mean...
Yeah, exactly.
No, yeah we're production. It's like, get it out of here.
He had some intense advice for new filmmakers. He was saying, you're not going to get your movie in a theater. You got to go to the internet.
Right.
That's what he was saying, basically.
Well, nowadays, it's all
That's
changed.
That's what he was saying about these days.
Yeah, right. It's all
He's
changed.
Saying, you know, because some, of course, people are asking, I got a script. What do I do? And he says, go to the internet.
Right.
Because they're not going to get your thing in the theater.
You ain't getting nothing. The theaters are just so competitive. You got these $300 million budget movies, and it's like they've all got a lock
and
on
the contractual,
theater.
You know, with how many.
Oh, it's huge.
There was something
huge
about
money.
This Billy Jack anniversary, and he was saying back then you had to take in these small towns to the main theater in town and have a run there before you could go to the regular theater in the old days.
Yeah.
He was talking about his first film in the 50s about some creature on the on the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
He said that opened up in like 500-600 theaters.
Right. No
you
more.
You could do that in those days.
Yeah. No more.
Yeah.
He said nowadays. His movies for years, what they did is they just went straight to video and then straight to DVD. They don't even have a theater
about it. Back then, though, it was quick distribution. Like SST, I mean, the thing was you could be an indie company, but you got to be able to get the stuff to the person to buy it, you know.
Right.
And getting out to 500 theaters that fast, taken care of that. That's probably the Sam Marco.
Nowadays, there's so many different avenues for exposure that the theater is just, especially
product
for a small
placement,
time.
Joe.
Well, yeah, but, you know, if you're some small-time filmmaker, your product placement isn't going to, you know, it's not going to get you anything. They're not gonna give a fuck about it.
It gets me to not want their product anymore. When I see it, you know what? It's obvious it's their product.
Okay, man. Yeah. We're at the end of the first hour, June 21st, 2009. Watt from Pedro Show, hold tight for hour two. June 21st, 2009. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show, and Brother Twan is further enlightening us to the inner workings of movie. Oh, I forgot to say what those other songs were. I got so enthralled in your thing. We heard, after Reactionaries, we heard Dance Weirdo by Meth Wedding, Stupid People by Cocho Bisexual, and No More by Sex Worker. So,
Brother Twan. That's your weekly trifecta of sex-related trash.
Where were we? What were we talking about?
It's about that badass who retired.
Oh, you're talking
about how he ran a tight set. You know,
you're talking about grips. You're asking about grips. So I was just telling you, you know, like it's not just a job anyone could waltz in on and think they can do. Just green. I was talking about my friend Herb Ault, who's just done one huge movie after another. I mean, I go to IMDb.com and punch in Herb Ault and be blown away by his resume. But Herb will work with, like, you know, Academy Award-winning directors of photography. And that's usually who hires the gaffer and the grip. You know, the key grip and the gaffer get hired by the director of photography. Because the director of photography is in charge of the look of the film and camera work and all that. So he wants his best people around him.
Right.
So Herb is badass. So Herb has all his own equipment, trucks, everything. And
he's kind of like a live stage manager. I mean, he's right there keeping everyone.
Oh, yeah, but he's
part of the mix.
Well, big time,
this energy. Yeah.
But he... What happens on a film set, and it's fucked up. As a crew member, which I've been for many years, I've backed out of it. I haven't worked on a film set in the last 2 years, but by choice, I mind you. But
why?
Why? Because I'm just being...
Fed up?
Yeah, fed up. Fed up with how the business works. Yeah. So it's not to say I won't come back to it, depending on the circumstances of what comes at me, but I'm fine with having walked away for now. But I love movies. You know, I just love
it
movies.
It sounds like it's like the record business at the high level, you know, where you have to put up
all
with
the shit, all the cocksucking and the bullshit.
All your creative juices.
Maybe this director of photography, he's got a crew that kind of...
He's the guy that's the pit boss, right? He's like all...
He's got like a regular team, right? Because they're used to each other.
And he knows what they're capable of. So like in Herb's case, right, the key grip... He works with a guy a lot named John Toll. John Toll won a few Academy Awards for his cinematography, right? So what happens on a film set invariably is you'll have some director who'll say this, and these are famous last words, and all film crew members hate hearing it. Hey, I've got an idea. Usually means you're about to get fucked hard, right? So then they'll say, if we had the camera, you know, up there, hanging upside down at this angle, it would be so fucking cool. And Herb will be taking notes, and then he'll think, okay, if I, you know, what would that take to do that? And he'll sketch something out, and he'll send it to his guy at his metal shop, and they'll fucking fabricate the part, and the next day he'll show up with it, And they can do it. So they're innovating on the fly.
So that's like
Herb is such a badass that he can do that. Not everyone's in his position, but
yeah, yeah. That's why he got to that level. Is he's a free form.
Oh, he's just
inventing on the fly.
Yeah. And he makes bank. You know, he does really well. Yeah, but it's a hard fucking job. And the
is he the guy that barks out the things? I saw them. They did Animal House where I lived, and Landis is upstairs smoking weed and doing Churchill. Mm-hmm. And this guy was just a badass. And that's why it was a tight. You know, they
got it efficiently.
No, the guy working for him, the in the position you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, the one really, the floor boss.
Oh, no, I think you're talking about a first assistant director.
Is that what that would be?
Yeah, it's a first AD. It's different.
So this is a guy that puts together what you
need
for a team.
There's a lot of hierarchy, huh?
Oh, it's huge, yeah.
So this guy goes
and listen, man, the film business
is kind of like food chain.
It's sort of. And,
because I see that, like, roadies in the rock music,
yeah.
There's
a pecking order. Yeah,
well, like,
sure.
If you put together the stage set, there's a certain pride in that transcends everything else, mm-hmm. I would think, right? You know,
right.
The creator of designing this,
right.
Thinking, how does, we got to make that 7/8 because it's
well, usually somebody else builds it, but someone else takes the credit. Someone higher up takes the credit for the work that other people have invented.
Session men, too, I've been told, there's kind of a food chain.
Yeah.
It's this human mentality about... Mm-hmm. It's not who you know, it's who you blow.
Right, right. Yeah. There's a lot of truth to that, you know?
LA Unified.
All right, let's hear some music.
Did not fade from noise meditation. We stopped abruptly while spinning down. This is not to depict hesitation. A silent gesture for princess's pleasure. Ah, see what heaven sent. Whoa, whoa. Actions, plastic stomachs wrapped in steel, hair falls in a Debbie's curtain, cash can Canterbury, Hollywood Boulevard, oh, you can count on it, yeah, Richard Hell, tacked to the wall, whoa, there's a bunch of kids, yeah, with nothing at all, whoa, our fears are circuits to amplify. Rapacious gardens of female distinction. Can you smell trouble? Libraries of rubble. I don't wanna know. Whoa, that's the highest score. No, that's when my poodle pukes. Yeah, on the gallery floor. Whoa, meditation. We stopped abruptly while spinning down. Hair falls in a debris curtain. A silent gesture for princess's pleasure. Here comes Mary Rat. Whoa, truly tattoo the wall. Whoa, take me back to this place, man. Yeah, love with nothing at all. Yeah.
Let me die. 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 Let me party guy.
To my event, I'm not sure why.
He's a drunken office party guy.
He really hates that band, G.I.
He's a drunken office party guy.
Poking our boss in the eye.
He's farting.
Watt from Pedro show. We had an enlightening insight from Brother Twan to start off second hour, and then we heard some music, something from the brand new Sonic Youth album, which is called Thunderclap for Bobby Pinn. Now, Bobby Pinn was Darby Crash's first rock name, punk name. And
didn't Kim then we heard the same high school as Darby?
Yeah, I think of difference in age.
Yeah, but I mean, they did go to the...
He was probably... I know people went to high school with him. Paul Rossler. Kira Rossler.
Yeah.
Pat Smear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, we had the Lightning Crabs after that with Kurosawa had no pre-war films. And then, which ties in with Brother Twine there.
Yeah.
Then we had Bob Wire Parachute by Closed Third Eye. And then we had Parachute by Jonks. I got to play with them in Houston, I think second time. Then we heard Drunk Office Party Guy by the Genuine Imitations. And then Captain Ass Grab by the Rogue Nations. And Bemsha Swing by the Coroners. And finally, Witch Hunt by Same Things.
Yeah.
Now comes this part of the show that I really dig, is Brother Matt and... his spin cycle.
Cool, thank you.
Crank it, man.
D. Wave valves rub on your brain valves constantly. Coming way louder than a wire that's scratching me. Bomb threat on the deck and right where you're at. Jumping off hard in the front and the back of me. Max it up properly. Open space. Coming way louder than a wire that's scratching me. Bomb threat on the deck and right where you're at. Jumping off hard in the front and the back of me. Max it up properly. While we got the chance to, yeah, yeah, you know how we do. Old school, new school, and combine the two. And damn, it seems you're doing it justice. I love the way you move it when we show up and bust it. Trust it, gets better, y'all. Cocktail, Malachor, sweat it off, digital or the analog. Like that day. Match it up properly. In the M-I-N-D. Wave valves rub on your brain valves constantly.
Select frequency.
Come alive to your eardrums sonically. Voodoo symphony in the M-I-N-D. Wave valves rub on your brain valves constantly. Yeah, that's the jam. You know we keep it rolling to the early a.m. Your mind plays tricks on me, so let me ricochet some direct frequency. Hey.
the mat.
Exciting.
Thank you for your spin cycle.
Cool. Thank you.
And what was the inspiration impetus?
Basic fat. Yeah, just into some fat beats. Had some bass fat nectar.
When's it? 29th?
August 1st, I know he's going to be doing Juju Beats.
You're going to see a gig, right?
I just saw one like two weeks ago. Henry Fonda was kind of shaky.
I got a flyer for that Juju Beats. I saw DeStefano play up in...
How was that?
It was cool, man. It was just this desert, you know, scene shacks in the middle of nowhere, and then it turned into, like a mansion party, only in the desert.
Yeah, it sounded like it was going to be pretty bitchin'.
I'm
going to
play in the desert.
When?
September 19th, Missing Man in Joshua Tree at Joshua Tree Saloon.
Oh, right, at the Happy and Harriet.
That's
the saloon's next
door.
That's
in Pioneer Town. Joshua Tree Saloon is in Joshua Tree.
Cool.
It's all part of that Yucca Valley.
Yeah. Yeah, they got a little scene going out there.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But the only time I played in the desert was when...
That Minutemen bus thing?
The Meat Puppets.
It was with Savage Republic. I think they did it a year later. And they ran it. We were the first one. Stuart Sweezy rented out these two school buses, got a generator, and us and Savage Republic played in a dried lake bed.
So it wasn't in
the wilderness. And you could actually see a picture of it in when you open up Double Nickels on the Dime. D Boone's got to wear sunglasses because the sand's blowing, and he wore contacts. Yeah.
He looks huge.
Richard Meltzer went to that gig.
Oh, bitchin'.
Yeah, I remember the bus on the way home getting a flat tire, and these cats come up and start throwing rocks. Oh. Like they come up there and start saying some stupid jokes and shit. And I said, laugh! And they start throwing, and everybody all of a sudden, from like, these guys are weirdos out there, are all frightened. They're going to kill us.
East Side rocks.
Yeah, it was a trippy thing.
So that's cool. That spawned a whole couple generations of righteous desert parties.
Yeah. Well,
hit the spot. That's
yeah, a desert party. Then I went to one where I wasn't playing. Einstein's in the Neubaut was out there. Maybe it was the same group of people doing them. And that's where I saw them. That was the last time I tripped. 83? Been a long time.
Good place to do it.
Kind of. Also with Einstudenz and Neubauten was Mark Pauline.
With the machines.
Some of it was kind of dangerous.
Yeah, crazy robot stuff.
Like 20 shotgun things going off. And
circular saw arms.
Some very intelligent person had a handgun and was shooting it off in a crowd. And, people tripping and stuff. I don't know. And firearms.
Really. Yeah, it's a bad
those
combo.
Are better than the best rock concert.
Bad combo. Didn't you do like Joy at Sea around that same time too?
Joy at Sea was when we rented a boat with Meat Puppets and just sailed around playing.
Uh-huh. Man, that's one I wish I could go back in time for. I remember seeing the ad for that. It's like $15. You know? Sunset Cruise. I mean, 3-hour tour with.
Yeah, it's just sailed around in the harbor. Something I think there's a reggae boat in Long Beach that does the same thing.
Yeah.
I see it tied up on the other side of Alamitos.
Yeah, but having a Minutemen and a Meat Puppet, that's quite a cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear some more music.
Mr. Nels Klein. been very kind to us.
Watt from Pedro Show. That was Maggot Brain, a live version that I did with Brother Sister Daughter last December. It was my birthday, my 51st birthday in Tokyo.
Well, you've been holding
before
out.
That, we had Kate Sikora with the Countin' Song Part 2. Well, it just came out. There's a compilation called Kill Your TV 09. And I played you the whole thing there, but it had to be whittled down for the comp. I think it's half as long. But that's actually Nels Klein.
Also, they have to edit it down to 13 minutes from 27 or one of those.
No. That's actually Nels Klein's first gig ever in Japan.
And
he came the night before on the airplane. Yeah.
Just flying.
No prack.
Wow.
That's Nels.
Just had to go and...
It's a gunslinger.
Wail on it. And, we've done Maggot Brain a bunch, but we did other songs, too. In fact, we ended up 2 days after, we made an album.
Mr. Shinny play on this? With Nels?
Brother, Sister, Daughter is... Well, actually, it's an umbrella name I use for just playing in Japan. But this version here had his wife, Mishuko, on drums.
Oh, that's your umbrella name. I like that. I know it makes sense.
And Mr. Shimmy played guitar, and Nels Klein played guitar.
Wow.
But the first time I used that name, Sam Bennett on drums and Kramer on fuzz bass.
Right.
Kramer and Blackwater
fan. Oh, also, Jim O'Rourke played synthesizer. Mm-hmm. So there's actually five people in the band for the gig. And I'm going at the end of August to do 4 days in the studio with Jim O'Rourke and make a duo album.
Bitching. So Mr. Shimmy and a few people, they were the new Yoko Ono band?
They just played with... they got a couple bands.
Who's the bass player in that band? Why? Plastic Ono band.
Maybe Sean Lennon?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I know they're both playing. Husband-wife team. They also play in Cornelius. Mr. Kago was there. It was a big gig at Royal Albert Hall.
Did you go on that? Or?
And they have a... She's a drummer. And they have a band, Shuka, called If By Yes with Petra. I think Petra was involved, too.
There. Like it's just by
a... different combinations of the same people. A little pool. And then before that, we heard Mouse on the Keys, which has got... played with them on that tour I did a year and a half ago over there. And started off with a new song by Light that they recorded just before the day before their first U.S. gig in Manhattan. They recorded that in Baltimore. They don't have a title yet. Okay, we're at the end of the second hour, June 21st, 2009. Happy Solstice, Father Day. Mott from Pedro, hold tight for hour three. June 21st. 2009, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show, and here's part three of Jack Flanders in the White Castle.
Jack.
I thought I'd find you in the Casbah.
Isn't it amazing?
It's like having the whole world at your fingertips.
He never said anything about this.
Including, where did you meet Sanford White?
I met him in Paris, in the spring.
Ah. April in Paris. Whom can I run to? What have you done to my heart? Sounds wonderful, except Paris in April. It's usually damp, dark, and cold.
It was a lovely day in May.
May in Paris, with the bees and the birds and the blossoms. That must have been romantic.
I had stopped at a sidewalk cafe. It was very crowded. Oh, the tables were so close to each other, I was almost rubbing elbows with the man seated next to me. He was a large man in a white suit with white shoes and wearing a Panama hat. He made a comment about the weather, we started talking about Paris, and then, when he discovered I was from Montreal, he told me that he had once lived there.
But why are you in Paris? Are you on holiday?
It does me good to get away from paradise now and then.
Is that where you live? Paradise?
That is where I live, yes.
And where exactly is paradise?
It's an island in the Caribbean. It's called St. Alicia.
Oh, I assume it's very beautiful.
It's breathtakingly beautiful.
And what do you do there?
I'm building a castle.
Oh, a castle in the tropics.
Yes, an honest-to-God castle. I would have preferred to have bought one ready-made, but they're rather a scarce item down there.
Is it a large castle?
As castles go, no, it's rather modest.
So is this something you've always wanted? Your own castle?
I had an English nanny who told me stories of knights in armor and tales of the Holy Grail.
Oh, and princesses held up captive by dragons.
Yes, there were fierce dragons guarding great treasures.
Oh, were you disappointed when you discovered that life isn't like that?
But it is.
Really?
These things may still exist, but on dimensions that are quite different than ours.
Do you believe that?
I do. And I believe so do you.
And then he told me how we'd found the perfect location to build this castle. He felt it was on an intersection of Earth energy lines.
Oh, you mean ley lines?
Yes, though I was skeptical.
Why?
Well, I felt if he had built this castle in a sweet spot, as he called it, that it may have been a sacred place, once used by the original inhabitants of the island.
There were stories of ancient rituals.
Sacrifices?
Oh, yes. And even a lover's leap.
Oh, a cliff that lovers would leap from?
Life can be tough for lovers.
Oh, it sounds like a strange place to build a castle.
I don't believe any of it. You must come and see for yourself. I think you will find it's a very sweet and benevolent location that I've chosen.
But why are you building a castle?
Why not? What is life for but to explore?
I thought you said you had retired.
No, I can never retire. There's too much of life to experience. My castle in the moonlight is one of the loveliest sights you'll ever see. Trust me.
A few months ago, I received an email from Sanford. There were photos of his white castle. He never mentioned that it was white. When I saw what he had built, I thought this was out of a fairy tale.
Yeah, it's out of a fairy tale, all right. His own.
What are you saying?
I don't believe it.
Why don't you believe?
Well, this is such a state-of-the-art castle. It's hard for me to believe that he built it just to indulge himself.
Well, I think he's the type of man who does indulge himself.
Oh. Excuse me. I was trying to find their railroad room.
The what?
The railroad room, you know, where they have the trains.
Are you going somewhere?
I was going to meet Mojo. He said he'd be in the railroad room.
I don't know where that is.
Yeah, I thought I heard a train down the hall.
That way?
No, the other way. That way is Copacabana.
Oh, I think they're having fireworks there.
In Copacabana? I'll tell Mojo. They'll see.
Now, where were we?
Sanford.
There's something fishy going on here.
Oh, Jack. Do you always have to turn everything into a mystery?
And you think it's all just hunky-dory?
It's what?
Hunky-dory.
What is that?
Well, you know, Peachy Keen, Jim Dandy.
Oh, do you mean Ducky?
Ah, Ducky. Yes, exactly. Everything here is just Ducky.
Huh, good. I'm glad we agree.
Huh?
I had a very strange dream. I met Sanford White.
Mm-hmm. What was he like?
I didn't actually see him. In my dream, I was walking along the beach. There must have been a moon. Everything was in a sort of half light, in black and white. I saw something in the sand. It was a seashell, you know, the kind you hold up to your ear to hear the ocean.
Did you hear the ocean?
I heard a voice.
Oh! Here you are at last.
Pardon?
Will you help me?
Who is in there?
Please help me come out of my shell.
Who are you?
I was put here by an evil genie.
Why?
Oh, it's such a long story.
I'd like to hear it.
Once I'm free, I'll tell you. Will you help me?
How?
Take me back with you.
How do I know that you are not the evil genie?
Do you believe in evil genies?
No, but you could be.
Trust me.
Are you a good genie?
A very good genie.
If I set you free, will you give me 3 wishes?
Your wish is my command.
Will they come true?
They always do.
All right. What do I do?
Rub my shell.
Rub your shell?
Yes, please.
You mean like this?
That feels good. Now the other side. Oh, yes. I love it.
And then I woke up.
Did Mr. Genie come out of his shell?
I don't know.
You're saying Sanford White was the genie.
It was his voice. But here's where it gets creepy. When I woke up, there was a seashell on the dresser. And my sandals were covered with sand.
Do you sleepwalk?
Not that I know of.
Did you listen to the seashell?
Of course.
No. Did you hear anything?
I heard the ocean.
No genie.
No. I even said, hey, anyone in there?
The shell had been vacated?
It was a very strange dream.
Maybe while you were sleeping, the genie climbed out of the shell.
You mean he's running around free in the castle?
I guess we'll find out.
Then when do I get my 3 wishes?
Oh, well. I think the only way you're going to get them is to dream on.
Is this New Delhi?
Looks like old Delhi.
Do they have delis in Delhi?
Yeah, one on every corner.
No, they don't.
I'll ask Rose.
I wanted to tell you that my cousin Rose told me that Johnny Seven knew Sanford White. I emailed Johnny and he's going to join us.
Really? Johnny Seven?
Oh, he's a character.
I liked him.
When's Johnny coming?
He's flying in this morning.
There's an airstrip on this island?
His plane has pontoons.
Huh? The more the merrier.
But where is Sanford White?
Does he have a plane?
Oh, he probably has a teleporter.
Does anyone remember their dreams from last night?
I do. I found a seashell with a genie in it.
Oh, yeah? Did you make a wish?
I wish I had.
The genie's voice was Sanford White.
He was in my dream, too.
Hey, is that Johnny?
I think it is. I'll tell you about the dream later.
From Pedro Show. Started third hour off with part three, Jack Flanners in the White Castle. Then we heard World's Tiniest Rainbow by Secret Codes. And then Give Me Your Love by 51717, which I heard upside down as Lilies.
Code. I didn't bring my Dakota.
Maybe the lady's name is Lisa. I don't know. Secret Code.
Yeah.
Now, Bob, you had something to say.
Relating to?
It don't matter.
Legal Weapon last night. Pretty yeah. Good. Really great to see Cat Arthur out
there. You're manhandling the camera there.
Yeah. Yeah, filling in here, part of the abandoned tree. But I thought Legal Weapon was pretty good. They had the original drummer.
You got a history with handling cameras, right?
Yeah.
Venice or Mars, The Red Tide Rising.
Well, in high school, we actually did a weekly sportscast, and we covered a motocross match with our high school. Interviewed Brian Gumball. He was the prick then, in 1973, too. Rafer Johnson, my friend Glenn is interviewing.
I'm talking about the Raymond Pettibone movie. Didn't you handle the camera there?
Yeah. And the Morrison, most of it.
In
my dad died, and then someone took it over, but... Yeah, I seem to recall.
Now, what was that about? Like, what Raymond just said, Bob, here's a camera?
I don't remember that part so much as trying to find someone to play
Pan. I can't remember either. That's why I'm asking.
Raymond and I would go to these bars in Hermosa trying to find someone to play Pamela. And as Raymond said, it would have been easier if we were making a porn flick. I mean, when they hear, it's a Jim Morrison. And
no, about you getting the camera.
So Raymond and I went to the store to actually buy the camera that I ended up using. And it's a Best Buy. And he asked the guy at the time, before Watt was brought in, you want to be in it? You can be Jim, you know. And
you mean the Best Buy clerk?
Yeah, the Best Buy clerk that we bought the camera from, okay? And so Raymond explains
well,
this way.
Well, my telepathy didn't work.
No,
you still got to use words,
is.
Bob.
The guy has no idea what's going on. And Raymond's way of describing
it. Taking the camera from
the bullpen.
His way of describing it to the guy is, this is verbatim. I was telling someone this last night. He's trying to pitch it to him, and Raymond just says, well, it won't exactly be a Disney budget, but people will be watching this film 50 years from now. That's word for word what Raymond said. I remember
that scared the clerk away.
Yeah, the guy was like ready to macaroni, you know, like General Georgic Custer.
All right, so you got the camera.
Yeah, and I don't know how you came in the picture because Raymond was out of town, but I was just around.
No, but how did you end up shooting the thing?
Very carefully. In the Neutra houses, it was hard to work with. The one thing I tried to do with my camera work was keep the idiot sheets out, because you guys were so good on just seeing it and going with it. But with my training in film, I couldn't, with good conscience, just have that in there if I could eliminate it. But we shot in a Neutra house. It's a very tight space, you know, Econo. And the camera that Raymond and I bought, we didn't realize. We didn't put... You're talking about not knowing your
equipment. No, what I'm saying is the movies I did with Raymond before that, he worked the camera.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And so, what, you guys have a discussion about this?
You know, that's what's cool about Raymond is it just happens on the fly. It's like you were talking about earlier, if you're around and...
He just handed the
camera. We're just
kind
of playing around with it.
Yeah. All of a sudden, what I remember is all of a sudden Bob's got the camera. Raymond shot a lot of the early scenes.
Yeah, and his are much better because... he actually had a vision of what he wanted. But when it came to the script, he went to Germany and his mom, I don't know.
The script got lost.
Part of misplaced.
Yeah.
And so he was rewriting on the fly, and so
that's
he's
why.
Only one
that's
that knew
why.
What he wanted. And with
that's
Rayman,
why he's
you don't,
rewriting
the actors
script.
Don't see it.
Yeah.
I'm not told what the scene even is. So that's being creative, is when you have no idea what it's even about, and you have to go with it live and create a rhythm.
You didn't know where the camera was going.
No, and the limitations of the room in terms of the camera we bought was in too tight, and the nurture, I couldn't bring it out far enough to really... So the limitations, I'm not saying that's the only reason it wasn't great, but with the parts of Raymond Shower, he's shooting their feet. See, he had seen this, like, Ulysses, you know, when he was in his head.
Right.
He had that film in his head. So whether there was a script or not, that could have been a silent film. He would have shot that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was directing as
you also
shooting,
acted
see.
In it. Who'd you play? Ray Manzanera?
Ray Manzanera.
And
you
and
said
also,
I played someone else.
Yeah, the manager.
That was when he was filming us on the roof. That's the best scene.
The manager, yeah. Too. You got two roles.
Yeah, haven't you seen those Harvey Korman films? That's pretty common, you know.
Harvey Korman?
Eddie Murphy.
I mean, not Harvey Korman. Roger Corman. Those
Harvey Korman.
Harvey Korman. Yeah, she had another one that did the other ear, you know, and, you know, Tony Orlando.
Hey,
not three times, if you'll.
What's the name of the film you're talking about?
This is,
Red Tide Rise in Venice or Mars, and it's just kind of a take on Jim Morrison's later days.
Just
in
before
the
he goes to Paris.
Well, it ends up in Paris because I end up dying in the bathtub, but my ghost comes back. I get these leather pants on.
My dad
had
died. When I came in and saw that a few months back, when I finally got the thing, I go, "Wow, man, this is they went satiricon on this. It got pretty."
Now you know I was there in Paris, the 36th anniversary of his death.
Yeah.
And there was a cat. We played the gig. Was it like June 5th, June 6th, June 4th?
Like
July. Somewhere early July. Yeah. And there was a guy at the gig who said he was in the club that he last was to. And he actually died in the shitter of the club. And then they took him to his pad to make it.
That's cool.
Like he died in the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
And it was too strong of a dose of a heroin or something.
Mm-hmm. It's like Janice. She got hit with, got some good stuff for a change, and just boom, gone.
They say she was like last at Barney's Beaner, or her car was parked.
Yeah, that's on the Graveline tour.
Down the block.
That's the first stop on the Graveline tour. Almost.
Yeah. Let's hear some music.
Like direction.
will rule the world. We eat fried chicken, sing hail, hail Colonel. Cause I'm a Mason. We'll be right back.
Juan from Pedro show. Last music for the show was start off with Rara Avis. Or maybe it's Avis, because it sounds like Latin. Rara Avis by Muzzled Hymns. I heard the Palos Verde and Pedro guys.
Oh.
And then we heard Freemasons by a Chicago band called The General. And this cat told me that The General, who knows The Prisoner?
Yeah.
Number six.
There's an episode called The General. There's some kind of like speed reading program, but it's actually a way to implant mind control.
NLP stuff.
The guy's like some television program. I'll teach you how to speed read or quick learning.
Speed learning,
but it's actually buying the party line stuff. And the general actually is a pewter, and he defeats the pewter by some kind of paradox, like I don't know. This is false.
He makes it time out by going
or something like that. No, he gets
an infinite loop.
Yeah, it's like the gerbil is running the wheel, so it doesn't comprehend.
Yes, this is not true. This is a lie.
Yeah, it keeps defaulting back to it's the alpha and omega.
Wait, if you're on or off, then I don't know.
God, I should know it because I've seen it like 30 or 40 times.
I'm not familiar with it.
Well, there were 17 episodes. At the time, 67, 68, when it was being made.
Yeah. Black and white.
Or is it 60? No, it's color.
The TV show.
It was the most expensive television show on the planet.
Yeah.
$100,000 a show.
Yeah.
This guy, Patrick McGoohan, who died a few months ago.
Secret Agent Man.
Had a show called, actually it was called Danger Man. When they brought it to U.S., they called it Secret Agent Man.
P.F. Sloan.
He was good on that.
And he had a very successful show. So what they said was, we'll give you a show where you direct and write. And he only wanted 7 episodes, but they said, we can't syndicate it. So he had to add 10 more. Mm-hmm. In the middle of some of them, he did Ice Station Zebra. And a trippy man. Actually had to move to L.A., because the last episode was so lame, a lot of people thought it was a lame ending, and they were threatening the kids. And
was it editing? Bad editing?
No. The plot was just too.
The spectators can be brutal, can't they?
Yeah, man.
That show was the reruns of, you know.
Yeah, it was a great show. I didn't know it was color until I got the DVDs. I never saw it.
Well, we
I saw
had
it
black and white set when it was on.
Same
That's
with
why
me.
I think
Same
of it that way, you know.
But it's not. It was color, and it was made in this place called Port Merion in Wales. Some Clough, Sir Lord Clough, built this kind of little town that was
town.
Based on some Italian villa, so it looks much different than other Welsh kind of thing. In the village, you can go there, and maybe one day I would like to. I've played in Bristol. Which is like next to Newport. It's around the border with England.
Kids in Bristol are sharp as a pistol.
Yeah. All right.
When
I was from Bristol, the pop group.
Yeah.
The pop group.
Oh.
They were from Bristol. Yeah.
Brother Matt, okay, so time last night.
After The General, that tangent, we heard Land of Laughs by The Woolen Men, and then The Ballad of Honeysuckle Peach by The Charmkin Rebellion.
Sweet.
And that's got Vince Maroney on drums.
Oh, cool. Hey, Vince.
And also this band he's been playing horn with, and harp, called Atomic Sherpas, dug in deep. And then finally, we heard So Long, Okay? By Mr. Little Jeans.
Cool.
Is that a name? Is that a good name for a band, Mr. Little Jeans?
So you got crabs, but no clams. And, that's a shock, kind of. But
Vince is one talented dude.
He can blow many instruments.
He rocks.
Did a lot of gigs with Carlos Guitarlos.
Yeah.
Much respect to Vince. Yeah. He wants to get into recording. He got a little Pro Tool thing, and so he wants to be on the doing side, not just the playing side. So that's great.
Dude.
His adventure. He was in a couple bands. You were asking about me touring in the 90s. He was in a band called The Crew of the Flying Saucer with Nels Klein and Michael Preisner. It's only time I tried to use two drummers. George Hurley would tell me, Nanya, give me too much to do on that kick drum thing. I thought if I had two drummers, then it wouldn't be such a burden. But it was a weird chemistry.
That's hard to say.
Although Vince Maroney, great drummer. In fact, later I had him in a band in the late 90s called Pair of Pliers with Tom Watson. Tom Watson's actually been in 3 bands with me, The Pair of Pliers, The John and Terry Show, and The Missing Man. And both him and Raul are going out with Lou Barlow.
And that guy gets some crazy sounds coming out of that thing. That's great. I dug him when he was doing his little D-Boon dance.
Yeah, yeah.
That was great.
And Harold.
I'm
talking about Harold.
I'm about to teach him the jump.
Yeah, that was great.
I like making a little corridor behind Raul. Now I can get over and be with him.
Yeah, that was great. He did that.
No, it I think it enhances, you know.
I just get to be over there, especially even be behind both of them.
Mm.
So it's not like they're backing me up. Mm. It's like I'm backing them up, literally.
You know, Tom's pretty good with those facial expressions on stage. He has some Lugosi.
That guy's great.
Bella Lugosi-isms.
He's got some face.
Very, you know, yeah. Raul was having fun last night.
Look, I want to thank everybody for coming aboard. Bob.
Always a treat. For me, at least.
Joe. New man, Kevin. You know, we didn't hear one word from Kevin.
Taking care of biz.
You got to say something.
What about your stunt driving ability at 3 in the morning?
I can back a car up fast.
Yeah. Much respect. And Brother Matt, you're always essential.
Thank you.
This has been the June 21st. Happy Solstice, Happy Pops Day.
Yeah.
2009, keep your powder dry.